From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Bane of the Red Queen by Kit Wessler. In the bleakness of winter shall a child be born who carries the mark of Selene, and she shall be the Red Queen's bane. For the first time, Queen Carmack could recite those words and laugh. She strode lithely around the stone chamber, nearly dancing in her excitement. Caramay, called the Red Queen in part because of the glorious hair that fell in ripples and waves past her shoulders, but more because of the bloody terror of her sorceress reign. Her cynical and bodyguard, Gladiware of Gloud, stood in the window, dividing his attention between his queen and the courtyard below, the latter nearly invisible through the sleet. It was bitterly cold in the high chamber, whose windows were neither glazed nor shuttered, and Gladiware was bundled heavily. Yet the queen wore only a light gown. Gladiware glanced at her, impressed as ever with the sheer vitality of the woman, the fierceness that he had once loved and then hated. He looked back into the sleet. Beside his hand on the windsill lay a crossbow, a sporting weapon too light to pierce armor, but deadly enough in the hands of a marksman. The Red Queen whirled towards the grim stone stab with its rusty stains that stood in the center of the chamber, then away again, too full of malice and glee to stand still. "The prophecy," she laughed, "the last hope of fools and romantics. Did they think my art could not find this child?" "There was less art in it than thoroughness," Gladiware observed mildly. She gave him an ugly look, then laughed. 100 mothers in this city due to birth this month. My art found them all, even those who thought to hide in cellars and attics. And my tower held them." Gladiware nodded, still watching the courtyard, empty but for the gray weather. "And the child is mine now," the queen swept on, pacing feverishly. "They are bringing her now, and the blood of a child of prophecy can weave such spells as even I have not yet seen." Gladiware could not help glancing at the altar, at the blades and pincers and nameless potions on the scarred table beside it. He hoped that Caramay did not notice the shudder he could not suppress. There was a knock, and at the Red Queen's snarl, the heavy door opened to admit a gaunt serving woman carrying a shapeless bundle. The queen cried out in triumph, snatching the bundle. Then her voice changed to a cry of fury. "It's dead! The baby is already dead!" The serving woman shrank back. "Please, Your Highness, it died before I touched it." But the queen did not deliver the expected blow. "Is it the one?" Caramay demanded, pawing through the clothes. The serving woman looked quickly at Gladiware, desperate and pleading, and the tall man nodded shortly, the only reassurance he dared give. "There," the Red Queen said, "the moon-shaped birthmark. It is the one." "Thoroughness always pays," said Gladiware stolidly. He turned away as the queen threw the pathetic bundle onto the altar and spat. "Get out," to the servant who complied in haste. As the sleet fell more heavily, Gladiware began to fear that he would not be able to see the expected signal. But as the queen began to pace again, muttering furiously, he saw it. A thin flicker of a lamp shone once, twice, and again at the far gate. He quietly cocked the crossbow and dropped an iron-tipped quarrel into the groove. But when he turned from the window, he found Caramay facing him, smiling. She held her hand, breast high before her, and a clawed gesture he knew signified deadly power. "You fool, Gladiweir," she said, low-voiced. "Did you really think I would know that your men could look up all the nobles who still support me and disarm my Red Guard and steal the talisman from the crypt, all without my knowledge? I knew it all the time." With a sneer, she made a throwing motion and said a loathsome word under her breath. But Gladiweir merely blinked and held the crossbow steady. It was the first time he had ever seen her face turn ugly, the first time he had seen the shock and dismay of failure in those great blue eyes. "Your power is done, Caramay, as it was foretold." "But the child is dead," she shouted angrily. "The prophecy is foiled." "I regret that we were not quite ready in time to save the girl's life," Gladiweir said calmly. His gray eyes were as bleak as a frozen courtyard below him. "Better to be smothered on the stair than to be given life to your spells. But it is no matter to you either way." "But the prophecy said that the child would be born," Gladiweir told her. "No one ever said it had to live very long. Nor did the chroniclers ever mention the iron-tipped quarrel that did in point of fact end the Red Queen's reign." The Reluctant Vampire by Deborah Militello. Sharon woke with the worst headache she'd ever had, worse than her monthly migraines, even though it wasn't quite that time yet. This one was different. Her mouth and throat were dry. There was a grapefruit-sized knot in her stomach. Her golden eyes pulsed in rhythm with a throbbing head. Hunger clawed her stomach like a wild animal. Sitting up slowly, she realized she was still wearing her party dress. "What in the world did Treveran put in my tomato juice last night?" she groaned. "Probably slipped in vodka, and after I told him I can't drink alcohol, I'm going to kill him." When she stood, her legs felt like rubber bands. Cradling her head, she shuffled to the kitchen, opened the fridge, and took out a bottle of orange juice. The gurgle of liquid splashing into the glass echoed like Niagara Falls in her head. She popped two aspirins in her mouth, took the drink, then gagged. It tasted like mustard and cayenne pepper mixed with powdered charcoal. She ran for the toilet but didn't quite make it. When she cleaned up the mess, she trudged back to the kitchen and heated water for tea. Pulling up a corner of the window shade, she caught crimson clouds in the September sky. A glance at the clock told her it was 7:33 p.m., just past sunset. "Oh no, Mr. James will fire me for sure. No excuses." The fragrance of the almond mint tea soothed her anger slightly as she inhaled the steam. Her breath swirled tiny tornadoes above the cup until the tea was drinking temperature. But when she tried to swallow, her throat tightened. She choked, and tea splattered the table and her dress. She slowly wiped her mouth and watering eyes. Treveran Dogola's going to wish she was dead. She stripped off her dress, went to the bathroom, and turned on the shower. The hot water felt good. She hadn't realized she was so cold. By the time she stepped out, she felt more alive and much less irritated. Blow-drying her short ebony hair took a few minutes, but she couldn't wipe the mirror clear enough to see her curling iron. She threw up her hands and sighed. "Well, I'm not going over there to impress him, just to remove his head from his shoulders." The air outside her apartment was crisp and autumn spicy. She knew the full moon was hiding behind the trees and buildings, just waiting for the perfect moment to rain silver light on the city. Treveran's place was an upper-middle-class neighborhood, usually 15 minutes away by interstate. Sharon made the trip in 10. Screeching her car to a halt before the large glass and brick house, she jumped out, slammed her door, and strode to the front porch, where she leaned on the doorbell. The heavy oak door creaked open. Suddenly looming before her were the dark eyes and swarthy figure of Treveran, dressed in black Levi's and shirt. He didn't look at all surprised to see her. "Come in, Sharon. There are some people I would like you to meet." Leaving the door open, he turned around and sauntered down the main hallway. Sharon stood motionless, the words she'd practiced all the way over gone from her thoughts. Without protest, she followed him into his den. Four men and three women lounged in casual dark-colored clothes. When she hesitated in the doorway, they all smiled at her. Taking her hand, Trevarin led her to the room's center. "Tonight, we add another member to our family. Sharon, we welcome you." His lips brushed her hand. She shivered from his touch. Suddenly, she regained hold of why she had come. "Look, Trev," she said, jerking her hand away and poking his chest. "Spiking my drink wasn't funny or nice. I told you that alcohol makes me sicker than a dog. Because of you, I've probably lost my job. I don't suppose it matters to you, but I have to work for a living, unlike you rich people." A slow, toothy smile lit Trevarin's face. "My dear Sharon, you do not have to work if you do not wish to. You're welcome to stay with us now." Sharon glared at him. "That's the last thing I'll do." One of the women, who seemed vaguely familiar, moved toward her. "Sharon, you belong here. You're one of us. We all have the same blood." Sharon gaped at her. "Excuse me? The same blood? Are you claiming to be my long-lost relative or something?" "No," the woman said, a feral look in her gray eyes. "Newly found relatives. Trevarin did put vodka and blood in your drink last night. You've shared blood with us, and now we're blood kin." Sharon shook her still pounding head. "This is getting too weird. Goodbye, Trevin. Thanks for nothing." She turned to leave, but Trevarin clutched her arm and spun her to face him. His narrowed eyes gleamed intensely. "Sharon, you are my bride. At the party, I made you like myself, a child of the night." With more force than she'd intended, she slugged him in the stomach. He doubled over and she backed away. "I'm not married to anyone," she began, icy calm. "If you cooked up a wedding last night, I can have it annulled, because I wasn't sober. As for being a vampire..." She flicked her long, sharp nails and rang her tongue over her emerging canine teeth. She smiled as she read terror in their eyes. "Werewolves can't become vampires."